Okay, so with these 6 crowns that we've mentioned then, John, is it possible to trace back and find out the exact period where the formation of Wivenhoe Town Cricket Club came into place? When this first game of 1765 wasn't the club as we know it, is there any sort of structure of different teams that you can see across these grounds?
Well, the club first formed itself into a club that was worthy of the title of Wivenhoe Cricket Club. It wasn't Wivenhoe Town Cricket Club until the mid-60s. But it was Wivenhoe Cricket Club from about 1840. I say about 1840 because I was never able to pin down the exact year the club first formed. My first post-formation reference to the club was 1846, when I found a reference to a match played at Wivenhoe Hall, which doesn't appear in Nicholas Butler or Dick Barton's book, actually, so I can only assume they didn't find it. I managed to find it deep in the vaults of the Essex Standard. So in 1846, I can prove a club existed, and it had already existed for some years by then. So that leads me to think that 1840, as appears on our club flag, was very likely the first formation of the club. Other research proved to me that the club then went into some form of decline and reformed itself in 1858. And then there was another period of decline before it finally reformed itself for the third time in 1879. And in 1879, it elected its first formal committee of president, chairman, secretary and treasurer. And as far as I'm concerned, that was the first occasion when Wivenhoe Cricket Club became a sustainable entity. And it hasn't gone into decline since. It had some tough years around the First World War when it was thrown off 10 acres, and it had some tough years in the Second World War, but it's been in existence for sure in its current form since 1879. As far as the teams it's fielded, there's always been a first 11, as you would imagine. On and off, there's been a second 11. The second 11 certainly played at the end of the 19th century. It didn't exist after the First World War, but it soon reformed. Sunday 11 appeared in 1951. The formation of the Sunday 11 is a story in itself. W.G. Lovelace, our longest-serving president and pillar of the Wivenhoe establishment, and his wife were staunch churchgoers, and they did not believe that cricket on a Sunday should be played. It was the AGM of 1950... at which W.G. Lovelace led a vote against Sunday cricket, which he lost, and as a result he resigned his presidency, which was a shame that W.G. Lovelace, so respected and great a servant of the club, should leave in that fashion. But Sunday cricket was born from 1951 onwards, alas, without W.G. Lovelace as our president anymore. But from that day onwards we've had a Sunday 11. And occasionally we've had a third or even fourth 11 playing. So the club has had a variety of 11s over the years, and they're all documented in meticulous detail in the book, and it's perhaps for the connoisseur, that section of the book, but I've covered it in the appendices, so don't worry, it doesn't bog the text down.
Yeah, so cricket is notoriously, John, a game which is fascinated and based around stats at every level. So that must have really aided your research. But I would think, from an author's point of view, then your task becomes one of looking at what might be considered dull stats and then trying to take stories out of those figures and try and actually read a bit more behind the scenes. Is that something which you were doing? And so looking at averages and how long someone's been playing for and then being able to form conclusions for the actual text itself.
Well, you're right in everything you say. My methods of research included looking at as many newspaper reports as I could find going back to 1765, and that's why I spent many long hours in Colchester Library and Essex Records Office trying to find Wivenhoe cricket matches. I logged every person I found who played from the listed teams. I also had the benefit of a full set, bar one, of minute books that go back to 1922, in which teams were often listed, so I was able to abstract those and put them into my database. I've then got several hundred scorebooks, alas, not a full set, going back to 1879, of course. My oldest one, I think, goes back to somewhere in the 1930s. but I abstracted all the names from those. And then I've got the end of season averages that the club has traditionally published. Apart from a few shocking years, surprisingly recently, when we failed to publish a decent set of averages, I've got averages going back to 1970. So armed with all those different sources, I've been able to put together a database of over 1,200 people who have played cricket for Wivenhoe. And I can record, I've recorded how many years they played. That way, I've been able to sift and sort my database into what I call the 271 capped Wivenhoe cricketers. And my capped Wivenhoe cricketers are people who have scored 1,000 runs, taken 50 wickets, or played for 8 consecutive seasons. And they're all logged in the book. And the 271 capped cricketers are named. The stats that I've quoted in the book are only stats that I've derived from 1970 onwards. I have got some stats from before 1970, but they aren't, they're not consistent, they're not for every season, and so therefore I've more or less had to disregard them. So the statistical part of my book is only the last 41 years of statistics, which, when you consider current playing members, certainly covers all of their careers. So I'm quite pleased with the statistical section that I've finished up with, and I've been able to put down players' career stats and highest this and lowest that and best average for this and best average for that, all based on the last 41 years. And it's thrown up some, you know, surprising facts and things that I'm sure will delight my colleagues.
And so from some of those figures, John, is it possible to mention any of the characters or some of the stories? What are some of the most interesting ideas or facts that you managed to actually uncover yourself about any of the legacy of the players or any stories which have taken place?
Well, the stories that go into the book, and they're, let me say, they were far more than I thought I'd ever find when I set out on this, include, and I'm just quoting a few now, randomly snatched from the air. One of our earliest patrons was Claude Champion de Crespigny, who lived at Wivenhoe Hall in the 1850s. The third baronet, who was a very, very benevolent a cricket fan, but his son, Claude Champion de Crespigny, fourth baronet, who's become a cult hero in my household, was a fighter and an adventurer like you've never seen before. He played cricket for Wivenhoe, or in Wivenhoe as a boy, but went on to join the 60th Rifles, the Royal Navy. He took up ballooning late in his career. He tried to get a place on Stanley's expedition to find Livingstone. He once offered his services to be a picador in Cuba whilst on holiday. He once found himself as an assistant to the hangman in Chelmsford Jail. And all of this, an ex-Wivenhoe cricketer, Claude Champion de Crespigny. And he wasn't afraid of having a street fight if there was a lady's honour to be protected or a point to be made.
So that's some kind of role model for modern day Wivenhoe cricket players. That's something to try and live up to.
Well, it is. I mean, you might question some of his antics, but actually, he was. I grew very fond of him the more I researched. If I could, I'll just read out a quote.
Do.
I found a picture of Sir Claude in the Essex County Standard in, I think this was from the 1930s. He was by then a very old man. And in fact, we have one letter in our archive written by him to the club in his own fair hand, which I treasure. But underneath this picture of him is the following caption, and it refers to a balloon race he was about to arrange between two balloons that get mentioned here in the piece. And the caption reads, Sir Claude de Crespigny, who is arranging a balloon race between the Valkyrie and the Lotus. It is understood that the race, if arranged, may probably be started at Maldon. Sir Claude, despite the fact that he's passed his 60th year and undeterred by his many accidents, will probably travel in one of the balloons. He has had two bones broken while ballooning, three arm bones smashed while hunting, three ribs fractured while steeplechasing, one rib broken in a cab accident, one finger broken while riding, two fingers fractured on a rough, in addition to having been partially scalped by a favourite monkey. So that's Claude Champignon de Crespigny for you.
And not a single cricket injury mentioned in that.
None at all. He was actually Britain's finest amateur steeplechaser in his career. I mean, the man's written his memoirs, and they're freely available to download from the internet, and it's a cracking read. Anyway, that's Sir Claude. Other characters who deserve a mention, really, would be in 1907, our captain was Henry Dawes Swan, who was a bit of a character who went on to become the chairman of Essex County Cricket Club and managed the 1922 MCC tour to New Zealand and Australia. But Henry Dawes Swan was well connected. He was a pretty poor cricketer himself, but a good leader, an inspiring captain, and very well connected. And he brought to the club in 1907 several ex-first class players, including. The highlight for me is Digby Loader Armroy Jeffson. And cricket connoisseurs will recognise the name Digby Jeffson. Jeffson was the last of the celebrated underarm lob bowlers, and he was commonly known as the Lobster in cricketing circles. He played cricket for Surrey and the Gents of England and Wivenhoe. He came to Wivenhoe for the seasons of 1906 and 1907. And he was popular enough that he appeared in Vanity Fair magazine in 1902, actually, as a cartoon character in a series of very famous cartoon characters. And I'll quickly read the caption that appeared under that picture of our very own Digby Loader Armroy Jeffson. It said, "He is a most dependable person who scores best on a slow wicket, though he can generally make runs when they're most wanted. He is a nice-looking boy who has contributed entertainingly to cricket literature. He's also confessed to missing a player through sleeping at extra slip. Yet there is no risk of the depreciation of Surrey cricket while he is a Surrey captain." So, apart from the fact that he would sleep at slip, this nice-looking boy was captain of Surrey for some years and came to play at Wivenhoe. So, Digby Loader Armroy Jeffson, the Lobster. The Lobster.
We can see it's a picture in the book of the Lobster lobbing the ball, which I'm sure now is not really allowed in the modern day rules.
Well, underarm bowling is in theory allowed, but is frowned upon, in fact. But you can understand, it must have been a fascinating sight, because you can imagine the ball held in the right hand lends itself to a very sharp wrist spin, leg break effect, and thrown as a lob or a fast low ball must have been very difficult to hit. But a great sight must have been to see him. More recently, characters, Leslie Compton, brother of Dennis Compton, played at Wivenhoe. We know that for a fact. Leslie Compton and Dennis Compton were the nephews of W.G. Lovelace. And they came to Wivenhoe quite a lot in their youth and childhood. And W.G. Lovelace, who was getting near the end of his career in 1934, invited Leslie Compton to come and play for Wivenhoe's second 11. In a game where W.G. Lovelace was due to be awarded a memento to celebrate some of his finest hours. And we've got a lovely picture from 1934 with Leslie Compton lined up with the Wivenhoe side. So, you know, that's one of our claims to fame, is to have had one of the two brothers. We can't prove that Dennis Compton ever played, although there are some elderly club members who feel sure he did, but I just could never prove it. But that Leslie played is beyond doubt.
And is it possible, is there any information in the book, John, where you can say, who do you think was the best player to ever have turned out for Wivenhoe? Obviously, we're talking about the game has evolved hugely, you know, since this 1765 match, both in terms of the laws of the game and the expectations and the skill. But is there any one character which is just recognisable as being the best, either batsman or bowler?
Well, what a fascinating question, Jason. I've never been asked that. I don't know why, but I haven't. Well, as you can bet, I can't give you a straight answer, but I'll have a bash. Arguably, Les Compton surely must be one of the best players. But, of course, I haven't yet mentioned our very own Neil Alan Foster, because Neil Foster joined the club. In fact, as he says in the foreword to the book, I was his first ever captain almost 40 years ago, when I was a colt and he was in my colt team, which I'm very pleased that Neil made that point. So Neil Alan Foster was undoubtedly our best bowler because he went on to become Wivenhoe's only ever test cricketer. And what a fine test career he had. of the more recent regular club players, statistically speaking, I know that the most successful all-rounder that ever played for our club was a Barbadian student at the university, very popular, very gentle, very kind player, Julian David Corey Roach, Julian Roach, who was our best all-rounder, and statistically we can prove that. The best bowling average belongs to a chap called Ray Sidaway, who played in the late 70s and 80s. And Ray was an ex-minor county player who stayed at Wivenhoe for many years. The best batting average actually also belongs to Julian Roach, who I mentioned before. Other great players I have to mention would include Andrew Golding, who was effectively the grandfather of Wivenhoe's current coaching regime, which has really been the thing that unlocked the excellent side that is Wivenhoe First 11 today. Because as I sit here, Wivenhoe First 11 sits atop the two counties Division 1, which of those of you that know local cricket means we are the most successful club outside of the Anglian Premier League at the moment, which, again, if you'd have asked me that 10, 20 years ago, I just would not have believed. And that's an honest side, filled with local youngsters. We have two first-class or near-first-class players playing regularly for us. Billy Godleman, who's an Essex cricketer and often opens for Essex, plays for us because his father and brother are also members of the club, and Billy has made it his club of choice, and he's very proud to play here. And our Queensland overseas coach, Nathan Rabnott, who's on the verge of first-class cricket status in Australia. But those two excellent players, coupled with our local youngsters, have led Wivenhoe Cricket to be in its... really in the ascendancy at the moment.